See, we're reading Brahma Samhita. Text 45 is marked. Shriyam yata dadi vikara vishesha yoga sanjayate nahitata pratigasti heto yasambutam apitata samipartikaryad govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. Translation and purport. Just as milk is transformed into curd by the action of acids, but yet the effect of curd is neither the same as nor different from its cause, milk, so I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, of whom the state of Shambhu is a transformation for the performance of the work of destruction. Purport. The real nature of Shambhu, the presiding deity of Mahesh Dham, is described. Shambhu is not a second godhead other than Krishna. Those who entertain such discriminating sentiment commit a great offense against the Supreme Lord. The supremacy of Shambhu is subservient to that of Govinda. Hence, they are not really different from each other. The non-distinction is established by the fact that just as milk treated with acid turns into curd, so Godhead becomes a subservient when he himself attains a distinct personality by the addition of a particular element of adulteration. This personality has no independent initiative. The said adulterating principle is constituted of a combination of the stupefying quality of the diluting energy, the quality of non-plenitude. Can you pronounce that one?
Non-plenitude.
What does plenitude mean?
Fullness.
It's
like the marginal potency are fragmental, so they're non-plenary, like the... function expansions are all plenary.
Yeah.
They're full. They're complete. Like a plenum.
Okay.
In Latin, right, what is it in Portuguese? A full moon, how do you say it?
Luna plena. From lua cheia. Lua cheia.
In Italian, they say plena. Luna plena.
Full. Yeah. So, plenitude. Non-plenitude means non-complete or non-full. Huh?
Yeah.
Of the marginal potency and a slight degree of a static cum cognitive principle of the plenary spiritual potency. This specifically adulterated reflection of the principle of the subjective portion of the divinity is Sadashiva in the form of the effulgent masculine symbol, God Shambhu, from whom Rudradev is manifested. In the work of mundane creation as the material cause, in the work of preservation by the destruction of sundry asuras, and in the work of destruction to conduct the whole operation, Govinda manifests himself as Gunavatar in the form of Shambhu, who is the separated portion of Govinda, imbued with the principle of his subjective plenary portion. The personality of the destructive principle in the form of time has been identified with that of Shambhu by scriptural evidences that have been adduced in the commentary. The purport of the Bhagavata sloka, Vaishnavam yata Shambhu, is that Shambhu, in pursuance of the will of Govinda, works in union with his consort Durga Devi by his own time energy. He teaches pious duties, dharma, in stepping stones to the attainment of spiritual service in the various tantra shastras, etc., suitable for the jivas in different grades of the conditional existence. In obedience to the will of Govinda, Shambhu maintains and fosters the religion of pure devotion by preaching the cult of illusion, illusionism, Mayavada. I got to read that again. Shambhu maintains and fosters the religion of pure devotion by preaching the cult of illusionism, Mayavada, and speculative Agama Shastras. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta is saying here that Lord Shiva maintains and fosters the religion of pure devotion by preaching the cult of illusionism and Mayavada and speculative Agama Shastras. The 50 attributes of individual souls are manifested in a far vaster measure in Shambhu, and 5 additional attributes not attainable by the jivas are also partly found in him. So Shambhu cannot be called a jiva. He is the Lord of jiva, but yet partakes of the nature of a separated portion of Govinda. Wow, there's so many points in this this purport. And it's such a bewildering subject, you know. Especially for Indians, you know, who have some Vedic knowledge and have some knowledge about Lord Shiva and the demigods. It's a very, very confusing issue that we come up against time and again. Not so much in the West, because Westerners don't know anything about Lord Shiva, but what people do in the West, or like, you know, I've been in Japan for the last 3 months, and what we have there is they call it a yoga boom. And yoga is very, very popular there, especially amongst women. But because people are taking to yoga, they're contacting Vedic information to one degree or another. And the majority, maybe 99.9999% of those who are teaching yoga, somehow they're connected indirectly or directly by the Shankara, you know, Sampradaya. So their information, whatever information they're getting about the Vedas and about Bhagavad Gita and about Lord Shiva, is coming somehow through that route. And so when ultimately people are believing that everything is Brahman, which is true. Vedanti tattva vidas tattvam yasganamadvayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti sabyate. That this, you know, it's mentioned in the first canto that this the absolute truth is a non-dual substance called Brahman, but it also manifests as paramatma and Bhagavan. And it doesn't go in that order. It doesn't go Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. It goes Bhagavan, Paramatma, Brahman. And that's where the confusion lies. You know, ultimately, if one is thinking that the ultimate absolute truth, the manifestation, ultimate manifestation of the absolute truth is light, is the Brahman effulgence, then how that Brahman manifests in the material world may manifest as Vishnu, may manifest as Shiva, may manifest as Ganesh, as Durga. It doesn't really matter because it's just a manifestation of Brahman. So it doesn't matter if you chant Ganesh or if you worship Shiva. And so this time when I went to Japan, there was a fella who teaches Ashtanga Yoga, and he's from New York, and he's in a line that comes from somebody from South India, you know, and he got a hold of us because he wanted to open an opening ceremony for his new yoga studio, and he wanted to have a Ganesh Puja. And Maru Mangal, the temple president in Tokyo, he's really into doing fire yajnas, and he knows, he's studied a lot, and he does a lot, he does weddings, and he's kind of well known. He's the only person maybe in Japan that knows how to do an authentic Vedic fire yajna. So this person, Barry, he looked up fire yajnas, I guess, on the web and found Madhu Mangal's name, so he invited us to come do a Ganesh puja at his yoga studio. I'm just citing this as an example because this is generally the case. There, and so maybe 40 people attended. Not 20 were his students, and 20 others were other different people who practice yoga who had heard that there's going to be a Ganesh puja. And so all of these Japanese people, a lot of them are yoga teachers, and they have some knowledge of Ganesh and Shiva, but they don't know how it all relates and what it all means. And so they all attended this fire yajna. We did a Ganesh puja. And they all have this confusion. They don't know who Shiva is or why they worship Shiva. Most of their teachers worship Shiva, and they're told about Lord Shiva as the supreme deity. But it's, then again, it's okay if you chant Ganesh or if you chant Durga. It just kind of depends on how you're inclined, because it's easier to worship the absolute truth in a personal form. But ultimately, you have to give up that form and merge into Brahman. And so this is you find this teaching, let's see, directly or indirectly, wherever you go to most of these yoga studios. And so constantly people come and ask us, who is Lord Shiva? Why do they worship Lord Shiva? What does it mean when you, these three lines, and what's the difference between Shiva and Vishnu? And so it's very confusing to see these differences. But here we see in the Brahma Samhita there's a clear definition of Lord Shiva and a clear explanation of what his position is, and how, although the absolute truth is one, it's ultimately manifesting from the personality of Godhead Govinda. Everything is a manifestation of Govinda, so are the jivas. But as it's pointed out, that the difference is that these manifestations in and of themselves are, they're not independent. They're dependent upon Govinda. So the jiva also is a manifestation of Govinda, but it's mavayvamsa jiva loke, a separated amsa. So you're separated portions. So it's only in these, in the four major sampradayas where this is clearly understood, that how the absolute truth is manifesting from the person and into the impersonal in all manifestations, from the personality of Godhead to jivas and to the demigods. And so Lord Shiva is in his own special position. As is mentioned here, that the jiva souls have 50 qualities. Lord Shiva has 55 qualities. Vishnu has, including Mahavishnu, the planetary expansions, the full expansions, have 60 qualities, and Lord Krishna has 64 qualities. I can't remember what Shiva doesn't have that Vishnu has. So Shiva has 55 qualities, and Vishnu has 5 qualities that Shiva doesn't have. And then, of course, Krishna, Govinda, he has 4 qualities that Vishnu doesn't have. I can remember those. One is beauty. He plays a flute. He has intimate, loving exchanges with his devotees. And what's the other one?
Not it's surrounded by his devotees is one of them.
Yeah, and then amorous pastimes.
Well, intimate loving exchanges you already said, and then I think the other one is the devotees themselves. I'm not sure.
His beauty and his flute, too, are also exceptional.
I know that one of the ones, the five ones that Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma sometimes manifest that aren't manifested in jivas, one of them is being all-pervading. I don't remember the other one.
They're eternal. Like Shiva is eternal, and his form doesn't change. He has an eternal form. And so the jivas don't have that. And his abode is eternal.
If we have nectar devotion, I can find it all.
So when the creation winds up, Lord Shiva is not destroyed. He continues on. But at the same time, he's not independent. And he is a manifestation of Godhead, but in contact with the material energy. So that was mentioned here in the Purport too, that because he's in contact with material energy, he's not in the same category as Vishnu. He gets influenced by that energy, or touched by it to some degree or another. And so, Ramaswamy, before you read Srila Prabhupada's books and knew this, did you have this conception of Lord Shiva, or was this new information for you?
Yes, Prabhu, it's a new information.
New information.
Yes.
So what was your understanding before you read Srila Prabhupada's books?
Before I read, I didn't even get into this idea of who's actually the Supreme. Brahma, Shiva, and Vishnu. Those three are the principal deities. Who are, I know that they are at the topmost level, but I never try to distinguish who is superior among these three.
And did you think that ultimately God was a person or impersonal?
Prior to coming to ISKCON, I went to some Mayavati school. School in the sense I used to attend their lectures. So they can teach that ultimately Brahman is the supreme. So, after attending their lectures, that's what I had in mind, that ultimately Brahman is the supreme, and everyone is God himself, like
also supreme.
Yeah, because everyone becomes supreme. Right?
Yeah,
it's like. They say that in each part, there are several parts. In each and every part, the sky reflects, and it looks as if it's a separate sky, but it actually it's the same sky. So, in the same way, we think we are different because of the illusion. But when we finally self-realized, we think that we are the God ourselves. And that is whoever attends those lectures, they get this impression.
Yeah.
But there are many who have not come to either ISKCON or attended the Mayavadi lectures, many in India.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to going attending those lectures, Mayavadi lectures, I don't know really who is supreme or who is not. So just worship everyone.
I would like to. So when I was a kid, and my family, so we used to worship Lord Shiva.
Mm-hmm.
So we have come from Shaiva Mata, Shankaracharya Mata.
Yeah.
So my ancestors, grandfathers, we used to worship Lord Shiva.
Mm.
So in my family, all my relatives who are comes under that Gotra, Shiva Gotra.
Mm.
My Gotra is Shiva Gotra. So we have to worship Lord Shiva.
Hmm.
So like Vaishnavas worship Vishnu, the Shaiva Mata, the Shankaracharya who brought the Hinduism at that time, right? Shankaracharya, people who come Shaiva Mata, they have to worship Lord Shiva.
So when I was a kid, we used to think that Shiva is the supreme personality, so we have to worship to get the liberation. We always do meditation. So we didn't know that when we were a kid. So when Shivaratri comes, so like Vaikuntha Ekadasi, right? In India, we should celebrate Shivaratri. So on the day, you have to do the full fasting. You have to do, you should not sleep on the day. If you do those things, you will get liberated. So when I was a kid, so that kind of impression we have got from my ancestors.
Yeah.
And even nowadays, most of the people, they do that. Like Vaikuntha Ekadasi, they do fasting for the whole day, Shivaratri. Even they won't sleep at all during the night time. So if you do that, you will get liberated. So when I was a kid, I didn't go through Bhagavad Gita, I didn't go through Prabhupada books. So if you have some problem, if you go to some doctors, kind of stuff, if I had some problem, I used to worship Lord Shiva to resolve my problem. So once your problems get resolved, you think that he is monitoring us, so he's a supreme personality. I had to surrender to him. So when problem comes, when the problem you get resolved, right, we think that okay, he's ultimately helping us. So we have to worship him. We have to offer some obeisances to him. So when I was a kid, I was thinking like that. My family, everyone. As I grow, when I was in college, I was from Tirupati. So we used to go to Tirupati Balaji Temple, the Mahavishnu Temple. So at that time, I had contact with Vaishnavas. I came to know that Mahavishnu was Supreme Personality of Godhead when I was in college. So I used to argue with them. No, Lord Shiva was the Supreme Personality, Mahavishnu not. Because Shankaracharya was the Shiva incarnation. So as per Shankaracharya philosophy, as my ancestors, whatever they have told us, Lord Shiva was the Supreme Personality. At that time they had a big fight with Vaishnavas and Shiva Mata. Shankaracharya and philosophy and Ramanujacharya philosophy. So the Vaishnava support is Shiva supports. So I was just arguing with them, no, Lord Shiva was a Supreme Personality. Even I had a reference Shiva Purana, so you have read. It's clearly mentioned that Shiva was the controller, creator, destroyer, everything.
Yeah.
He is a Supreme Personality. I don't accept what you will say. I was just arguing with him. So after later point of time, so I gone through some book. So Vedic, Vaishnava's book. So I came to know that Lord Shiva, always in meditation, was thinking of the Supreme Personality. So I was in that, so he was also meditating. I asked my ancestors, so a couple of my relatives, why Shiva was meditating? So we are the souls, we have to get liberation, we have to do meditation, we have to think of the Lord, so we have to control our mind. Why Shiva has to control his mind?
That's a good point.
I just asked him, since he was Supreme Personality, so why did he do meditation? To whom you have to do meditation? So as a human being, we have to do meditation to get liberation. So I had to do meditation. So I just asked the question. So they couldn't answer me properly. So but I was just thinking, because if you know the observed, who have to surrender? So a lot of people, they should tell me this life is full of miseries, you have to get liberation, you have to surrender to Lord Shiva. But I was in finding of searching of a Supreme Personality at that time. But at that time I was a kid, I didn't know about ISKCON. At that time there was a temple in my place also, ISKCON temple. So I thought, okay, I came to know that Mahavishnu was a Supreme Personality. So I was in that assumption, till my engineering also. When I do engineering, I should think that Mahavishnu Supreme Personality, Shiva was created by Mahavishnu. That information I have got. Then I started worshipping Mahavishnu, Narayana. Because since I'm from Tirupati.
But then you had to give up worshipping Narayana. And you had to start worshipping Krishna.
Then I started worshipping Narayana. I used to do every fasting, every Saturday. I used to go to temple, Narayana temple. So then when I came to Bangalore, to one of your bank also, I was under impression Narayana was a Supreme Personality. I haven't read Bhagavad Gita and I haven't read Prabhupada books. Since I don't have a knowledge, I didn't have a knowledge. So whatever people had told me, I just believed it. Shabda, for you, but I didn't go through the actual books and I didn't find the absolute truth. So in India, misconception is whatever people say they believe. They won't go through, they won't go on, they won't find out the absolute truth. If you say something, I will believe. The next day, if some person comes, they say something, I will believe. People never spend time to go through and find out the truth. they still believe the person, whatever they say, they believe. So I was thinking, okay, Narayana Supreme Lord, someone has told me from the temple. So then my sister took me to ISKCON temple, Bangalore temple.
Hmm.
At that time, I went to temple, what is very commercial, I didn't find that kind of feeling. I didn't find the peaceful. I thought something, I didn't know the actual importance of Krishna. I thought Krishna was incarnate of Mahavishnu.
Hmm.
Most of the
that's what it says in the dictionary.
Think that Krishna is kind of incarnation.
Yes, yeah, if you read the dictionary, it says he is the eighth incarnation of Vishnu.
So even I was thinking, oh, Krishna kind of avatara, Rama avatara, Varaha avatara, Narasimha avatara, Krishna also an avatara.
Yeah.
So everyone, our avatara source was Narayana, so Krishna is from Narayana. I was just thinking in such a way that. So then my sister has given me one book. She just asked me to go through this book. You will find out the truth. I just went through the book.
Which
even
book was
I
that?
I didn't find anything. But it is kind of self-realization book. SSO. Self-realization book.
Science of self-realization.
But okay, it was clear. I didn't understand what Prabhu was saying. The first time I was going through the book. Very, very complicated, very high philosophy. Not understanding.
Wow.
Then later, one devotee has forced me to take Bhagavad Gita. When I was going to the railway station, he forced me to take Bhagavad Gita. So I said, no, I don't want Bhagavad Gita.
Prabhu, you know, this is a really interesting story. We don't have a lot of, we don't have so much time.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting to see, you know, the changes that you went through by getting this knowledge. But could you just wind it up? Because we got to go on with the rest.
Yeah, then I have read that 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, 8th text. Aham sarvasya prabhamataha sarvam pravartate itimatma vachante maam buddha bhava samamitaha. He tells you, I am the source of material and spiritual world. And also clearly says, prajapatiti rudram chapi aham eva shrujam ve. That means clearly explain that even Krishna, Brahma created by me, but still they are not aware of that, they are controlled by delusion energy. Even Shiva himself is not aware of that, he is killed by Krishna.
Yeah.
He is controlled by his energy. So I have read the sloka. Then I have realized that the actual purpose of creation and how they have created and how they are controlled by Krishna's energy.
Mm.
So even Shiva himself is not aware of, he is killed by Krishna. What about our human beings? So I just questioned myself. So then I realized that Krishna is a supreme personality.
Can I read the qualities?
Yes.
So, besides the first 50 qualities that are found even in the jivas, when they're pure devotees to some extent, Lord Krishna possesses 5 more qualities, which are sometimes partially manifested in the persons of Lord Brahma or Lord Shiva. These transcendental qualities are as follows. 51, changeless. 52, all cognizant. 53, ever fresh. 54, Satchidananda, possessing an eternal blissful body.
Mm.
55, possessing all mystic perfections.
Mm.
So those are the 5 that Brahma and Shiva sometimes manifest. And then Krishna has 5 other qualities which are manifest in the body of Narayana. And they are that he has inconceivable potency, uncountable universes generate from his body, he is the original source of all incarnations, he is the giver of salvation to the enemies whom he kills, and he is the attractor of liberated souls. And all these qualities are manifested wonderfully in the personal feature of Lord Krishna. And besides those 60 qualities, then Krishna has 4 more which are not manifest even in the Narayan form of Godhead. What to speak of demigods or living entities. They are as follows. 61, he's the performer of wonderful varieties of pastimes, especially his childhood pastimes. 62, he is surrounded by devotees endowed with wonderful love for Godhead. 63, he can attract all living entities all over the universes by playing on his flute. And 64, he has a wonderful excellence of beauty which cannot be rivaled anywhere in the creation.
Yeah. So, 64, 60, 55, and 50 qualities. Nectar of Devotion. This is written by Rupa Goswami. It's the science of devotional service. And it's just another note. If you, the other sampradayas, even the Brahma sampradaya, they all worship Vishnu as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They don't worship Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It wasn't until Madhavendra Puri, who was two spiritual masters before Lord Chaitanya, that in our line, in the Madhava line, that they began to worship Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this is particularly brought out by Jiva Goswami, who is one of the six Goswamis. And his sandarbhas are all trying to prove, or are proving, according to Shastra, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it's based on this one sloka in the Bhagavatam, in the first canto, H.A. Chasam Kala Pumsam Krishnas to Bhagavan Swayam. And so, it's brought out here in the Nectar of Devotion by Rupa Goswami, and then it's elaborated by Jiva Goswami. And then from the time of Lord Chaitanya onward, we've been worshiping Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So unless one contacts the disciplic succession and receives this kind of knowledge, it's very bewildering, that who is the Supreme. And most people, because they don't contact the disciplic succession, even in different religions, on our own power, will naturally come to a conclusion that the Supreme is impersonal. Therefore, it doesn't matter who you worship, because we're all God. That's what it will come down to.
One of the lectures, Prabhupada mentioned that we cannot, as conditioned souls, actually cannot worship Krishna directly. They should worship Vishnu. But we are doing it only by the grace of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that he brought Krishna to us.
What was it? Who?
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
No, what was that first part again?
The first part is...
What were you saying?
Prabhupada said that the conditioned souls, they cannot worship Krishna directly. They should not worship Krishna directly. They should worship Mahavishnu.
Uh-huh. And where does he say that?
In one of his lectures, he said that, Prabhupada. Uh-huh. And we are doing worship of Krishna because of the grace of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Namo Mahabharanaya. Now, what's next?
Is it getting late? I think that we do the Namashtika now.
We finish at 10, right?
Yeah, we try to finish up by 10.
Okay.
But we can go over.
Well, I can't go too much over. I gotta. Okay, so Namashtika. Is that the yellow tab?
It's the first green tab.
Okay. I'm colorblind. I can't see the difference here.
Right up in the front. I got it.
Nakila? Okay. And who usually does this? Bali?
Yeah, we could have a volunteer. Yeah. I usually do the English.
Okay.